All right, I'm Flex Pavilion.
Hello, this is Andrew W.K.
Yo, 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 it's Miles from Slack Stupid.
This is Ali.
This is Nick from Chuk Chuk Chuk.
What's up, guys? This is the Chain Smoker. Is the name of school from Ghost?
This is Beefcake the Mighty from Guar.
Hey, folks, we're Royal Blood.
And you're currently listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions. Sound Sessions.
Sound what?
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of Sound Sessions. Thank you.
Hey there, this is Dan Andriano, and you are listening to Sound Sessions.
Until I get the sun in your lips, both pressing on my skin.
Chicago native and member of some of Chicago's finest bands, including The Falcon, Slapstick, and Alkaline Trio, bassist Dan Andriano joins us today. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today on Sound Sessions.
How you guys doing?
We're doing really well. So how's everything going? Now, I noticed that you just finished your the leg of the tour out in the UK with your other project, Dan Andriano in the Emergency Room. How's everything out there?
Oh, things are really good out there. England's always been nice to Alkaline Trio and and all of our, you know, respective other projects and everything. So I really wanted to get over there with the Emergency Room thing and just, you know, get it going, see how it would be, you know, see how people would respond to it. And it was really fun. I was able to work with some musicians I've never played with before, which is interesting and super fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool.
I was going to ask, like, is it, I mean, obviously it might be a little bit different than touring with a band like Alkaline Trio that has all that muscle and, you know, that push that you guys have over in the UK. But what were the venues like that you kind of played with in the Emergency Room?
I did mainly, you know, bars, little clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, London and Manchester were more like actual club type places, and then some of the smaller towns that played, you know, just little bars, and it was really fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
So the last time that I saw you here in Chicago was at the Riot Fest show that you guys played with Alkaline Trio. That crowd was intensely massive. That must have been one of the biggest crowds you played for in a while, huh?
Yeah, that was a good one. And I seem to also remember just having a lot of fun and thinking it was a pretty good show. And those two things don't always go hand in hand, big crowds and good shows, unfortunately. So we felt pretty good about that one. I mean, we knew that, you know, we had just done a big run of shows where we were playing like every record we've ever written.
Yeah.
And we haven't actually put out a record in a few years now. So we knew that Riot Fest show was going to be, you know, just sort of the last thing we were going to do for a little bit until we write and release another record. So we wanted to make sure it was special and everyone was pretty focused, pretty on point. I thought, you know, the nice people at Riot Fest, you know, they gave us a good slot, and we just had to take advantage of it, and it was super fun.
Yeah, I don't think that there's been an ever uproarious roar from a crowd that I've heard that was louder than at that Alkaline Trio show. What was it like going back and looking at those other albums too and playing those at like venues that you've probably been playing for years, like the Metro and everything?
It just was, I don't know, it's hard to put it into words. It's crazy for me to even think about the fact that we've got like 8 records.
Yeah.
And then to go out and play them and start realizing how many of the songs that we've never played, even at a place like the Metro that you're right, we've played, you know, dozens of times, and there's still songs from those records that we had never played up until this tour. So it was a really cool experience. You know, it's nice to sort of be in a band for almost 20 years and then still sort of feel this pressure and urgency to like, you know, oh man, we've got to bring it. Oh, I've got to remember this part and relearn this song. And, you know, that's all good stuff. You know, that's all what keeps it interesting and keeps it exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was no rust on the shelves when you were like looking back to From Here to Infirmary or something like that?
Oh no, there was a lot of rust and it took a long time to scrape off. But, you know, I think, you know, we all sort of did our homework before we got together, and you know, Matt had sort of the toughest job, just so many words to remember. And you know, so he had a lot of that going on. And, you know, for me and Derek, it was just, you know, locking in a lot of stuff that Derek and I had never even played together as a rhythm section.
Yeah.
From the first few records where, you know, he wasn't even on the recording. So there was all kinds of factors involved that just made it really, really interesting the whole time.
Well, I was going to say, like, I know they're probably like your babies and you probably can't choose, but were there some nights that are more fun than other? Like, what album were you having the most fun looking back on and playing?
Yeah, actually, the last night was consistently the most fun, and that was the night where we were playing Crimson and then Good Morning.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really, I don't know, it was sort of, a Good Morning is a really, it's a sort of a favorite of ours and our fans, apparently, at this point. But, you know, the making of that record was pretty rough. Like, Matt was going through serious throat things, and he had to see a doctor, and we had to keep postponing the recording. And, you know, so the memory of making that record was sort of stressful. But the finished product and, you know, what followed and the way people seemed to react to it was really cool. So getting out and doing that, playing that record front to back, was fun. And then, but also like playing Crimson, because when that record first came out, it was sort of different from anything we'd ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction initially, I feel like it wasn't that great. Like, people were kind of like, oh, there's a couple of good songs in here, but, you know, what in the world are you guys thinking? But I think over time, people have really gotten a chance to like grow into that record. And now when I talk to people, it seems like that's one of a lot of people's favorites. So doing those two and having it just be really fun, like 90 minutes of, you know, good times, was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. You know, it's weird to hear it coming from your mouth, because a lot of fans, like, especially here in Chicago, when all you can hear about is Alkaline Trio and we dissect your music like no other, the fact that, you know, it was kind of a more ethereal album, Crimson was, rather than, you know, the gritty kind of, like, punk rock that we were used to, and to see, like, how it has become one of the favorite albums. It's almost like Weezer's Pinkerton, where everyone was kind of like, what the hell are you putting out here? And then all of a sudden, everyone's like totally on board with it 10 years later.
Yeah, I mean, I think that record's got a really good flow. And that was one of the first records that Derek had a lot. Like, Derek was, I mean, he was in the band from day one, but there's a certain level of comfort that was achieved by the time we started recording Crimson. So by then, he was just fully immersed in like the whole studio aspect of making the record. And he had a lot to do with the production and some of the arrangements on that one. So I think, you know, that's when the band really, it was definitely a nice turning point.
Yeah, I really like that. You can tell that genuineness and the fact that you guys were a more full band, that you could actually go out and experiment, which was really strong, and you could tell on that album. So yeah. Let's kind of take it back to the beginning. Now, I myself am a Northwest suburb Chicago boy myself. I know that you kind of got your start out in Elgin, Illinois, huh?
That's right, yeah.
What was it like growing up there and creating that scene? Like, you were at the forefront of what music was becoming, especially out in the Northwest suburbs. What was the scene like back in the day when you were picking up a bass and playing shows, like, around the area? Where did you even play back in Elgin?
You know, there was a couple venues. There was a VFW hall where I saw one of the first shows that I ever went to.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a weird festival. I think it was called Helgen Palooza.
Nice.
It was the first time I ever saw Smoking Popes, a couple other Elgin bands, or a couple other suburban bands, definitely from around that area. But, you know, there was a place called the Third Floor that opened up in Elgin, that was downtown. That was sort of where Slapstick did the most of our early shows. And there was another place that I'm having a hard time remembering the name of. That was more of like an actual hall. That was pretty cool. I saw some good shows there.
Yeah, I think, you know,
I can't remember what it's called.
I can't think of the place you're thinking of either, but I think it's still around today, right?
You know, I don't actually know.
Oh, geez.
But, yeah, it was, I'll probably think of it by the end of the interview, but that was some cool stuff. And then, but it wasn't just Elgin, there was, Arlington Heights.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the Knights of Columbus Hall in Arlington Heights. There was, you know, there was a couple places just around, and you could sort of just make the rounds in the suburbs playing these shows, whether they were in rented halls or people's houses or whatever. And then, that was all sort of before the Fireside Bowl opened up.
Yeah.
And Brian, who was the main guy doing shows out in Elgin in the suburbs, Brian Peterson, he found a place in the city that was going to work, and all of the suburban bands, because by now we were all, you know, old enough to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he found this sort of central location, and then the focal point kind of shifted from the suburbs to all these bands from the suburbs, you know, getting into the city and playing all together, you know, so suburban bands like us, and then bands that we didn't know as well until getting down there, like Sidekick Kato and, you know, and Matt's other band, Jerkwater, from back then. And, you know, that's how the scene really got eclectic and weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And, then it really became incestuous and crazy.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love the connection that that Chicago has to this sound, this great music. Do you remember like the first show that you went to out here in the city when you're like, holy shit, this is what I have to be doing right now with my life?
It's hard to say because I feel like I was down there like every weekend. But
yeah.
I mean, you know, Slapstick had already been playing quite a bit and touring even, but, you know, way down in Homewood, I saw Jawbreaker.
Nice.
It's a club behind a record store called Off the Alley. And that was a really special show for me because I was such a huge fan, and I was, like, basically sitting on the stage for the whole concert, and that was a pretty awesome night. But yeah, what was cool about the suburbs and sort of getting back to that is because we were all, like, there was never really a focus on, you know, we got to make this band huge or whatever. Like, it was, like, as far as Slapstick, we just had so much fun in Elgin or whatever anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we weren't playing a show, then we were, like, in the woods, you know, throwing a party or finding a new spot in the woods to have parties. Or,
yep.
You know what I mean? Depending on the time of year, if it was hot out, we, you know, finding some dangerous railroad tracks or something to, like, jump off of into a river, you know, and we were all just kind of these, it was this weird, like, wild suburban group of kids that, you know, we weren't like angels, but it was only good fun, you know what I mean? Like, we did some weird and crazy things, but never, like, at the detriment of others, you know?
Yeah.
Only to the detriment of ourselves. And so it was all just fun. And then the shows sort of became more important as we got a little older and as, you know, we started to finish high school and whatever, and it was sort of like we ended up in a sort of a popular band, you know, on accident.
Yeah.
And then from there, by that time, we had made so many friends and acquaintances here at the scene that, you know, if one band broke up, it's like another band, two other bands had already started. So
yeah,
it was cool.
So let's go back to the fact that we just spoke to Tony Lovato from Mest last week, and he made mention of the first times that he was, like, really into bands was seeing you, like, back in the day at Fireside and everything. So what does it feel like knowing that you were the inspiration for some of the biggest bands in Chicago today?
It's crazy.
It's weird to think about, right? Because, like, I mean, you're a young guy yourself, and you inspired some of the greatest music in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, it is strange. It's just really nice to hear, I guess. It's like it's great to hear. Because the whole point of just, like, keeping that sort of scene going and not, you know, music and like what's popular in music will always come and go, but I guess the point is to just keep it going regardless. So that's really cool to hear.
So let's also talk about the fact that being from the suburbs, when I was growing up, listening to music, every person that I know had a connection to Alkaline Trio. Like the fact that the chord you touched with these suburbanite kids is just everlasting. What does it feel like when you are at these shows and these kids are coming up to you with their Alkaline Trio hoodies or Alkaline Trio tattoos up and down their arm? Like, what is that feeling like to know that your music just inspired this whole generation of fans and people who want to get into music because of you? I know I'm laying it on pretty thick with you, but it must be a really cool feeling to know that, especially here in the suburbs of Chicago, that you had this impact.
You know, it never stops seeming totally unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's always really, really amazing to hear or to meet someone and have, you know, even a quick conversation, you know, about whatever. Sometimes it starts with, you know, someone showing me a tattoo or whatever, but, you know, a lot of people, they did make a connection with the music, but because of that, it's sort of easier to connect on other things too. So people, you know, you can start having a conversation about the songs or, you know, a lyric that me or Matt may have written or whatever, but then it can quickly turn into, oh, well, did you hear this? Because this is what inspired me on this thing or whatever. And then we get into something else, or, you know, I can talk to kids about sports or whatever. And it's sort of like, it's amazing that we've made this connection, and it's also amazing how we kind of feel like we know them, and they kind of feel like they know us, and it's not totally unfounded, you know. And I've been seeing a lot of these same people for over a decade at shows, and it's really nice to look out in the first couple rows and see people that I can almost depend on seeing mm-hmm. every time we go to, you know, Detroit or play in Chicago or go, you know, anywhere. It's like you sort of, you know, there is a family connection there, and it's super special.
I love that. You know, the idea of family comes up a lot in music. You, Derek, and Matt have been together for quite some time now. So what is it about you guys that keeps that motor going? What is it, the glue that binds the band Alkaline Trio together?
I mean, we still just love doing it.
Yeah.
We love, you know, we love each other, obviously, and we love to make the songs. We all live in different parts of the country now, which doesn't make things easy, but, you know, we're able to obviously communicate whenever we want to or any of that, but we can also, you know, we can send each other songs, we can do all kinds of that. But then, you know, if we don't see each other for a few months and we get back together to start a tour or start writing for a record, you know, there's never any real catching up. It's just, you know, we're just, like you said, it is a family, and it's always just good to see everybody. And I think the drive has always been based on that, like the fun behind the band. You know, the band writes some dark songs, but it's always been about, you know, just putting that out there so we can move on and keep having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always been the goal. I mean, the only goals the band ever really set in terms of, you know, being big was like going out, and I don't know if you remember Lounge Acts when it was up on Lincoln.
Yeah.
But Matt and I were at a concert at Lounge Acts. And, you know, we were seeing Superchunk, and we were just like, man, it'd be really cool if we could just tour the country and sell out places like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that was the only goal the band ever actually, like, verbally set. And, you know, and we were fortunate enough to be able to do that. And so we just keep doing it until it's not fun anymore. But so far, it's always been fun.
That's so great, Dan. So, you know, I love the fact that you guys went to the Superchunk show and you're like, you know what, if we could just be like Superchunk, we'd be so, so happy.
Yeah.
What was that first time when you were together with Alkaline Trio and you played a show and you're like, holy smokes, I think we did it, guys.
I don't know if I can actually pinpoint a certain one. It was just because the sort of trajectory of the band was always so gradual. Like, nothing ever really, like, hit. Mm-hmm. It was like we'd sort of go. Touring was, you know, rough, but super fun. But, like, sleeping on floors and playing for, like, 7 people. And then it was going on tour, playing for a couple hundred people. And then, I don't know, it just kept building. But I guess, you know, there was maybe the first time we ever went to England, and, you know, we had never been there, and people were kind of freaking out. And, you know, we were playing some sold-out shows over there, like metro-sized places. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of amazing. I think, you know, right around that time, me and Matt were able to look at each other and be like, yep, yeah, I guess our goals are accomplished. What now? So, you know, we just kept doing it.
And another cool thing that you guys did was when I was a young lad, you guys had just put out Stupid Kid, and that song was on MTV back when it used to play music videos, and you went on tour with Blink-182 as well.
Right.
I mean, that must have been a pretty big experience, yourself playing with the biggest band at that time, especially when it comes to, like, punk pop bands, and opening up for them. I mean, that must have just exploded you guys as well.
Yeah, that was really fun, and it was cool to get out and see and, like, kind of see how a tour like that operates. Because, mm-hmm. You know, it was fun to meet those guys and play those shows. And, you know, initially I think we went out with them for like a week and did what they were calling like a small underplay tour. Mm-hmm. But really it was all places like as big as the Riv.
So for us
that was huge. Mm-hmm. And that was like a week of shows like that. And then a few months later they called us and said they wanted us to come open a few weeks of shows at, like, you know, these big outdoor sheds. So that was crazy, but it was cool, like, to meet, like, all their crew people. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'd never even thought about what goes into putting on a tour like that or whatever, you know. And just so meeting all their crew, like their techs and their lighting people, who were all super nice and really helpful to us, you know, because we didn't know what the hell we were doing. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. But then, you know, we made connections on that level as well. So then a couple of years later, when we were doing like Warped Tour, it was a lot of the same crew people that were running sound on that Blank Tour that were like running the stages at the Warped Tour, and they all remembered us and we remembered them. And so that, you know, that was really cool too. And it was just sort of like, because, you know, they were nice to us and we were nice to them, a couple of years later on Warped Tour, you know, it's all like, because that tour can be a pain,
yeah,
as well, you know. And but it was like, hey, I remember you. It's like, oh yeah, from the Blank run. It's like, just, you know, and it was, and that made that whole summer easy. You know what I mean? And so, it was cool. It was a different aspect to the experience. Like, when I think back upon it now, like, that just important as, you know, making connections with the people in the audience is still, you know, it's like everyone involved in working on a show is doing something.
Mm-hmm. I often feel like the fact that you can speak to people and you can network, and if you just give them that Midwestern kindness, which is so easy to give, it takes 2 seconds to be nice to somebody, that they're going to remember you. And maybe, you know, that's what kind of separates a lot of bands today, is the fact that the bands that can go out and actually not play the rock star card all the time and actually go and talk to their fans or talk to the people who are on the crew can kind of make it. Maybe that's part of the motor that keeps these bands going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm not I'm not thinking of anyone in particular here or anything, but just in terms of the way, well, MySpace and then even further on, like, Facebook changed the way, you know, bands can promote themselves. Like, it seems like, you know, a lot of bands can be young and new and have, you know, already have like 300,000 fans,
yeah,
in the world somehow, you know, because of the internet. So when they do go on tour, it might be the first tour and they might be on a bus already, or, you know, and then it sort of enables kids to get like a, you know, if you think about it the wrong way, or if you do things, well, what I'm going to say is the wrong way, you can get a big head about it, you know, before you've even done anything. And so I think that's, you know, I've, like I said, I can't really think of anyone in particular, and I probably wouldn't name them if I could, but it's, you know what I mean? It's like, you got to just be cool about it.
It's
gotta be cool and appreciative of what's happening around you, and just not just focus solely on getting out there to the, you know, the most people possible.
Yeah, that's a lot of bands don't put in the footwork that bands like that I grew up listening to and that you grew up listening to do anymore. It's really weird how that's happening. Well, let's go into the tour real quick. So the next time you'll be here in the city is for the Where's the Band tour, which is happening at the Bottom Lounge February 27th. So let's talk about that. I mean, where did this idea come from? You're going to be playing with Chris Conley of Saves the Day, Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids, Anthony from Bayside, and Andy Jackson of Hot Rod Circuit. So who came up with this idea?
I think it was our booking agent. It was a guy from New York who books everyone on that tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was his idea. I don't know whose idea it was. They've been doing this Where's the Band thing. They've done it a few times. I've only done it once. I did it last year, and it was all West Coast dates. But, you know, it's sort of – it's a cool concept. It's, you know, it's just because it's all – dudes in bands, obviously, and I think it's just a way for us to kind of stay busy if there's nothing else going on. Like, there's nothing for Alkaline Trio to be touring on right now. You know, I just did a couple things with the emergency room thing I do. So, and now I'm just working on writing new Alkaline Trio songs. But until then, it's like to get out and I can, you know, because now if I do the emergency room stuff, I've got two records and I want to just play emergency room songs and Alkaline Trio songs at those concerts. But with this Where's the Band thing, I can sort of do whatever I want. So I'll be doing Alkaline Trio songs. I'll be trying to like take requests. I'll be doing emergency room songs. I might do a cover. But so yeah, it's sort of fun. It's sort of, it just leaves it a little more open. And it's cool to get out with those guys because we'll all be in the same band and we're all sort of old friends at this point. So it's kind of like being able to tour. It's kind of like being in a different band for a couple weeks, you know?
Yeah, like a super group.
Yeah, that doesn't really play together.
So you're going to be playing a little bit of mix of everything. Is there any chance that here in Chicago we're going to be able to hear some new Alkaline Trio songs that you've been working on?
Yeah, I might be able to do that. We'll see. We'll see how far along they are. Or if... you know, it's hard to translate them down to acoustic if they haven't even really been built up yet. But I'll see what I got going on.
Very nice, very nice. And again, you guys can catch them out at the Bottom Lounge here in Chicago on February 27th. I mean, this is going to be an epic show. I'm planning on getting my tickets already so I can make sure it doesn't sell out too quick. Dan, I don't want to keep you for too long. I appreciate all the time here today on Sound Sessions. It was a pleasure talking to you. I do got to ask you one last question, though, if that's okay.
Of course.
I'm a huge fan of all the fan art that Alkaline Trio has. And my friends, I can name at least five off the top of my head that have tattoos going up and down their body of the skull, the heart, your name, Matt's name, everyone's name. What was the craziest Alkaline Trio tattoo that you've ever seen?
Oh. I mean... Craziest would, I guess it would just be in, because they're all crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy for me to even think about. but, you know, I've seen, like, Alkaline Trio neck tattoos, and that's pretty serious.
That is dedication heavy. Right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, just that in general. I'm trying to think of a certain design, and I feel like sort of, you know, I feel silly being like, oh, there's so many, I can't, but it's true. There's so many, and so many people have been really creative with them. So there's like, there's some good ones out there, but yeah, I would think it's more about like placement, like anything like above the shoulders or like on the hands, That's really real forever. And yeah. It's just crazy.
So no, like, full back tattoos of your face or anything like that?
Oh, no. But I'm going to be on the lookout.
Very nice. Very nice.
So I can say, this person needs to be committed. They got my face on their back.
That would be a whole another level of dedication to the band and yourself. Dan,
that'd be crazy.
Dan, this was awesome. Again, you can catch him on February 27th at the Bottom Lounge. You can catch The Falcon, who is coming out with new music. I am so stoked for this, in March. And anywhere else you'd like to find him, the Party Adjacent CD by In the Emergency Room came out on July 17th of this past year, so you can still check out that. Dan, do you have anything to add and say to your listeners here in Chicago?
Oh, I don't think so. Just thanks so much. And it really is cool to be on a WGN thing here.
Yeah.
Such a staple in Chicago and such a big part of my life.
Yeah, what kind of memories did you have listening to WGN back in the day?
Oh, well, Paul Harvey every morning.
Name drop. Yes.
Name drop every morning. I mean, on my house, and I mean, my parents loved him, and I love him, you know. Some of the best stories. What a great storyteller. And so, you know, that, and then, you know, being a big Cubs fan and a Bulls fan. And I mean, there's just so much about it. So, yeah.
That's so great, man. Paul Harvey, that takes me back. Well, Dan, again, it was an absolute pleasure to speak to you today. Thank you again for joining us on Sound Sessions.
Thank you.
This is Sound Sessions, your voice for Chicago music.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter @SoundSeshPod, and check us out on Instagram @SoundSessionsWGN.